All right. Who are you?
Hi, my name is Bogdan Osiborski. I'm Group Program Manager in the Unlimited Potential Group, and I'm responsible for Windows Starter SKU in the Windows family, Windows Client family, as well as for end-to-end client solutions for ultra-low-cost PCs.
Ultra-low-cost PCs. All right. Hi.
Hi.
Who are you?
And I'm Mark Light. Mm-hmm. I've got the responsibility for the development of Windows Starter Edition, which is a low-end SKU of Windows that goes to emerging markets. And then also this new category of low-cost PC device that obviously we want to provide Windows computing experiences on.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about, I mean, there's a lot of SKUs in Windows, but let's talk about the Starter SKU and then what's the difference between the Starter SKU and the SKU that's running on this machine here. And let's talk a little bit about this machine here, what makes it special.
Okay, the Starter SKU in XP and Vista mm-hmm. is essentially a SKU that was designed for beginner users in emerging markets. So you will see it in countries like Brazil and throughout all of Latin America. It's doing very, very well. It's in India, Turkey, and many other countries as well. Mm-hmm. You tend not to see it, or you don't see it, in the mature market countries. And so think of it as a SKU of Windows that is position for emerging markets that can ride on any value PC in general. Mm. So think of it as a SKU targeting the bottom one-third of traditional PC hardware. But what's happened in this low-cost space, or shall we say even the ultra-low-cost space on devices such as this, mm-hmm. is the cost economics have gone way down. The targets are now what I would call ultra-low-cost, perhaps sub $300, sub $500 in the cost range, and to achieve that, some trade-offs have been made. One notable one is a transition from traditional hard drives mm-hmm. into solid-state storage,
nice.
and that's pretty cool stuff in the mm-hmm. sense that the solid-state storage has lower power consumption. It's very tolerant to emerging market conditions such as dust and heat. Things like that. It's also tolerant to shock and vibration. Mm-hmm. One example of where this is hit first is education. That's kind of the beachhead. So some of the early devices came out trying to target students in the emerging markets. Kids that were going to be going to school, they needed a very cheap laptop to bridge the digital divide. And they needed something that was durable that could take some pounding from kids. Mm-hmm. And so they went with flash-based storage. And our challenge here is how do we get a Windows computing experience on devices that have as little as 2 gigabytes of mainline storage?
Wow. That's very hard to imagine. But you guys have pulled it off. You're working on it.
At a very high level. it took us several years to develop some of the processes and tools that go along with getting Windows XP in particular mm-hmm. To fit inside of 2 gigabytes. Any of the XP family will fit inside of that 2 gigabyte range. In fact, we've proven on several of the designs that we've worked on where we can get XP Professional, Office 2003, Learning Essentials 1.0, and roughly 6 small little applets or utilities, mm-hmm. all to fit in about a gigabyte. And that leaves enough room to allow for critical updates over time. So if you have a design life of 4 or 5 years, you need to plan for that. Mm-hmm. And that's roughly a couple hundred thousand or a couple hundred megabytes per year that need to be planned for. And then you have about 200 megabytes for a student to keep Word documents, PowerPoints, and things like that in the life of the machine.
Okay.
And so it's a tight fit in 2 gigabytes, no doubt about it.
Sure.
But this is a what I would view as a paradigm shift.
Okay.
As the dollars per gigabyte on flash technologies come down over time, they've been dropping at roughly 50% per year.
Nice.
The usage of flash in these scenarios at the low end and also at the high end is becoming more and more prevalent. And what you see is that at the low end, you can get cheaper than the basic hard drive cost, which most, you know, almost any hard drive you buy, the cheapest it will get is $40 or $50.
Mm-hmm.
Flash can be purchased in small quantities for half that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so you're seeing it at the low end there, and you're seeing it as a direct replacement of hard disk at the high end if you're willing to pay quite a bit of money for it. But over time, with the dropping of flash prices, you're going to see flash showing up in more and more traditional consumer scenarios.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about how we pulled this off. Is that something you can talk about?
Absolutely.
Like, how did we get this to run in such a small amount of memory?
Exactly. So Mark talked about some specific characteristics of those devices. There are really three things that make it hard to run Windows on those devices. It's a form factor. They all have 7-inch screens today. Mm-hmm. In the future, it will probably grow to 8.9, 10.2, but today most of those devices have a 7-inch screen with the screen resolution of 800 by 480. Windows was really designed and optimized for resolutions above 800 by 600. Mm-hmm. So this alone may affect user experience, and developers who design UI have to think that in the future they may deal with really small screens. There will be more and more mobile devices with smaller screen resolutions where some dialogues may not fit. So this is the one of the asks that we have, is for developers to think about smaller screens.
Okay.
The second challenge was the flash storage. And we have really two challenges here. The first one is the fact that flash storage today may be attached to a device through different buses. And there are a lot of different technologies and solutions in the market today. You can use SD flash. You can use USB flash. There are modules that use standard ATA, serial parallel ATA interfaces. There are also compact flash devices. Mm-hmm. They all use different buses. However, Windows was designed to run on spinning media hard drives originally, and only behind a small number of buses like ATA, SCSI, or fiber channel. So Windows natively doesn't support storage behind any other buses like USB and SD.
Hmm.
Some of those devices, like the Intel Classmate, uses flash storage behind USB.
Hmm.
If someone tried to install Windows themselves on this, it would not install and would not boot and would not run.
Hmm.
So we had to modify storage drivers on the USB stack to make it possible. The third challenge is the size of flash. Because of the prices of flash and the fact that flash can be purchased at the much lower price than the smallest hard drive today, affected the decisions of the designers. They went with the cheapest storage possible. However, they traded off for size. For capacity. So all those devices today have 2 GB, 4 GB flash modules. We live in the world where there's abundance of storage. The smallest laptop today will have probably 80 GB of storage. So designers and developers do not think about storage as a constraint anymore. However, in those class of devices, it is. Windows XP, if you install it from an installation media, will probably take about 1.5 GB on this. All by itself. So it leaves on a 2 GB volume very little for user data or applications. So we had to first figure out how we can squeeze Windows XP to use less space. So we can actually offer a very good user experience and allow users or OEMs to install applications and leave enough room for user data. And also, we changed the way Windows is pre-installed to allow OEMs and help them pre-install Windows in a way that they are used to in their manufacturing to install Windows on those devices.
Okay. So, I mean, let's talk... Yes. Comment coming over?
Well, one thought that crossed my mind as Bogdan was talking was that because this is such a new technology, that treating flash or solid-state drives, SSDs, the same as hard drives, such a new thing in the industry, we're seeing that that there are multiple different design points that are popping up as people are trying new things. And some of them, as Bogdan suggested, on the USB bus, if that's where you put the flash, you run into some challenges that affect the drivers needing to do different things. Mm. So some of the implementations have proven to be very easy to migrate a Windows experience on, and some have taken as much as a year of development work to ensure that Windows is providing full capability with all the reliability that we expect. And so one of the things that we've wanted to do as this transition to flash storage becomes more and more common in the industry is to try to converge down to some logical design points that make sense for the OEMs and designers for what they're trying to achieve and for giving Windows a predictable environment from which it can easily be applied.
Sure. So now in order to make one thing that's I'm really curious about is how you guys managed to take an operating system like XP, you know, it's a pretty large general purpose operating system, tons of functionality, and to get it to squeeze it to fit into that environment, I would assume means you remove certain features.
And we didn't.
And you didn't. So this is
not really. I mean,
so you're saying it's mainly driver level work that you've done.
I'll give you my kind of summary of what we've done. We started with XP stock. So you start with the same basic media that anybody else would. And the magic comes in helping the OEMs build their image in a compressed way. Mm. Some of the methods that we do there are enabling NTFS compression, using minimum installs of applications, changing or modifying some of the services that are on by default, slipstreaming all the patches such that it's much more efficiently applied, and many other techniques like that. Removing the page and Hibernate file was another example. And if you do a series of steps, which we have developed an OPK toolkit to automate and provide scripts to go through this process in a reliable way, that's how you get the compression. So it's not a new version of XP. It's traditional XP. It's all in how you build the image with the special tools and processes that Bogdan's team have developed.
Excellent. Now, so basically what you're saying is there's no page file that sys anymore.
Right. I wanted to add one thing.
Please.
We started with the very important tenet. At the beginning, we said we are not going to compromise application compatibility. So no matter what we did, we were always testing for application compatibility, and we built a solution that does not compromise application compatibility. This means that developers do not have to create applications specifically for this platform. This means that all the applications that exist that were designed for Win32, for Windows, using Windows runtimes, should work on this platform given the hardware constraints. Hmm. Right? This also means that developers who develop future applications don't have to specifically design a version for this device, as long as they keep in mind the hardware constraints, the small screen, the footprint, reduced resources, slow CPU, little memory, so they do not allocate too much memory. They do not create an application that is too big to be installed on this. Mm-hmm. It should just work.
Outstanding. So let's talk a little bit about these guidelines, because that's one of the things we were going to discuss today, right?
This new guidelines that your team has written up.
Absolutely.
So let's discuss. There has to be something for developers to know that is different than designing for 4 gigs of RAM and a terabyte of memory, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
So we have some guidelines for hardware designers, OEMs, ODMs, who build those machines, and we have some guidelines for developers.
Okay.
Our original experience showed that it was almost impossible or very difficult to install Windows on those devices. So we spent a lot of time and put a lot of effort first into enabling Windows on those devices and to make sure that it's very easy for an OEM or ODM. ODM means original design manufacturers to pre-install Windows on those machines.
Okay.
first to make sure that, like Mark said, the industry converts towards a small number of technical solutions that we can support out of the box. We create a design guide focused on ODMs and OEMs to help them make the right decisions that will guarantee that they can reduce their development costs, bring those devices to market much faster, and optimize user experience without needing to develop new drivers. The objective was to help them understand what they need to do in order to have a ready-to-go, out-of-the-box Windows solution.
Excellent.
So our design guide talks about specifically about challenges around flash storage in terms of the interfaces, the storage size, and impact on certain functionality of Windows, like paging, hibernation, crash dumps. We also offer some guidance on what ODMs and OEMs have to know about when they use the OEM preinstall kit to preinstall Windows on those machines, when they create the master images that are then used in volume production. We offer also, together with our design guide, a set of tools to OEMs that fully automate the process of creating the master image. Also provide all the information scripts they need to optimize Windows.
Okay, excellent. So, I mean, we keep kind of, I wouldn't say glossing over, but there's a distinct difference between reading memory out of flash versus reading it from a spinning disk, right?
Right.
As far as the software is concerned, this interface, I guess, searching for the bits on the disk or searching for it in the solid state. So let's talk a little bit about that. Are we providing drivers for our customers out of the box to handle the differences here?
So
in File.io?
It's a great question. We use NAND flash. It's non-volatile memory. Mm. However, for those solutions, this memory is packaged as storage. So it's exposed to the hardware and to Windows as a storage device, right? It's using existing interfaces like ATA, parallel or serial, SD or USB, but it still exposes storage. In a sense, it's no different from an SD card or a USB flash drive that is not seen as memory, random access memory. It's seen as a storage device that has blocks, sectors, and tracks.
Okay.
Windows wasn't designed for this type of storage. It was really designed for spinning media hard drives. Mm-hmm. However, in the disk and file system abstraction layers, this detail about how spinning media hard drives are built is hidden. And this is what we use. So we use devices that are exposed as storage. They're accessed by the operating system as block mode devices, right? And they are seen to the operating system just as another disk.
Excellent.
Fixed disk.
Cool. That's good. I just wanted to get that clear. That was important.
Mm-hmm. Right. There are some challenges, though, with flash, if you allow me.
Sure.
So we talked about the interfaces. We talked about the capacities. Another big challenge with flash storage is wearing. Flash storage I don't know how to call it, the thing that it wears out.
Okay.
On the number of write wear cycles.
Exactly. Mm. It's the flash storage is composed of cells. Cells, depending on the type of non-flash storage, can sustain a limited number of array cycles compared to hard drives that can be written unlimited number of times.
Hmm.
So
I was just going to say there's two main types of flash.
Yes.
there's SLC flash, which was the original single-layer cell flash developed back in 1989 or something like that, and it has a write-wear life of 100,000 cycles, quite a bit, and has done very well through the years. And of recent late, the cost curves are coming down aggressively, as I mentioned, but But most of the big cost gains are coming out of this new type of flash called MLC, or multi-layer cell, where you can get much denser packages built and much, much cheaper. So the cost, the acceleration in cost coming down mm-hmm. is being fueled by this transition to MLC flash, which is a great thing that the costs are enabled to come down like that. But the downside of MLC flash is it has 1/10 the right wear life, or about 10,000 cycles.
Wow.
And so it's something for designers to be aware of, and the main point is you can operate to either one if you know the design life you're trying to achieve, mm-hmm. you have good wear leveling algorithms, and that you test to verify that you're achieving appropriate design lives across the within a general purpose operating system environment.
Mm-hmm.
Let me add to this. So,
sure.
So flash is mostly used in consumer devices like mobile phones, cameras, camcorders, and other devices. Those devices tend to use large writes, infrequent writes, and a lot of reads. And this is what flash is really good for. Operating systems, on the other hand, use a lot of small writes. And this is what tends to wear flash faster.
Mm.
This is mitigated by controllers. So most flash devices have controllers that have wear leveling algorithms mm-hmm. that would take care of it and would extend the life of flash. But this is something that designers of those devices and people who select specific modules have to know about. And this is what we cover in detail in the design guide. We actually offer some formulas to help them estimate the life of a device based on the type of memory, the number of array cycles that this memory can sustain, and the capacities.
Absolutely. And again, the reason you guys went with flash and your architecture is because of size. Yes?
Well, size is one factor, but I would say cost was the factor that drove OEMs and ODMs to consider it,
okay.
because you can start with smaller amounts of flash that are cheaper than the base hard drive
sure.
that you would otherwise have purchased. So that was a key consideration, was cost. The second big one, I think, was in emerging markets for students, mm-hmm. flash is a much more durable storage medium. It can resist immense shock and vibration. It's solid state. There's no spinning parts to break.
Sure.
Dust doesn't bother it, and so forth. So it was perfect for the environment. It had lower cost, and as a result, it was a perfect fit for these kinds of machines. What's interesting is that it, say the Intel Classmate device came on board for students and proved out flash in these general purpose operating system environments. That was great for students, but we're now seeing a transition where the interest in these devices is moving from the education space into the consumer space, using, for instance, the ASUS EEPC. That device has gotten a lot of great press. It has a lot of people's attention in the marketplace, and it's clearly a consumer device.
Okay.
And so, you know, as you look at this usage of solid-state storage, this is really the early phase of the paradigm shift to flash, you might call it. I think as the dollars per gigabyte get to be equal with hard drives, which is expected somewhere around the 2013 to 2015 range, you'll see flash in mainstream scenarios in virtually all kinds of PCs, save for ones used for archival purposes or perhaps large media, you know, folks that are extremely intensive on media files. But you're going to see it in more and more places. Some of the manufacturer estimates, as we've scanned across the parties that we've worked with, talking to perhaps 10 different firms, I think there was an estimate of on the order of 20 million units they expected to sell in this category over the next couple of years. And so it's kind of at the knee of the curve and about ready to take off.
Outstanding. So let's talk again.
I wanted to add two
please.
Things why we focus on flash. It has lower power consumption. And all those devices were designed for education,
mm-hmm.
were designed to run all days on one battery charge. So it's a significant power saving that allows to do this. And the last one is the form factor, that the flash storage is much smaller or can be manufactured to be much smaller than hard drives and enables those small factors and even now thinner laptops that can be cooled better and just use less power.
Now, the lifespan property of flash that we had talked about, there is a possibility that flash itself, too, will continue to evolve. Yes, the technology is there such that it'll last longer over time.
Yes.
So that's just something to...
Absolutely. Right.
So why are we, you know, you're on the business side of things as well as the technical side of things. Why are we getting into this market?
Well, first, let me just add one more thought to the evolution of technology. I mean,
sure.
One example of that is some firms are now combining SLC and MLC flash in one common module set. So in the can will be both types. And the bits of storage that are going to be written once can go on the one type of flash. The stuff that's going to be hammered a lot will go on SLC flash, right?
Sure.
And so those are some hybrid designs that you're starting to see in the marketplace. I'm sure that over time, wear leveling algorithms will also improve and prove out MLC. So, MLC is the future. There's no doubt about it. The storage industry is moving in that direction, and I'm sure we'll make the appropriate investments to further more and more usage in PC scenarios. And I think that starts to get to your business interest of why are we doing that. We started here because our focus and our team was emerging markets. Starter Edition was our operating system that we intended to go into this space. And education is the prime reason that people in emerging markets purchase PCs. They're focused on helping their kids do better than they.
Mm-hmm.
It's all around education. And so these kinds of student machines happen to be the beachhead for flash storage, why it made sense as we talked before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's now growing far beyond just education and far beyond just the emerging markets.
Mm-hmm.
So the mainstream application of these devices, I think we're just now seeing. As a company, we've got tremendous interest in the what I'll call a new category of device, the ultra-low-cost PC, that I think is going to be not only useful for emerging market users to be their first PC, but I'd love to have one of these as an nth PC here in mature markets.
Sure.
And so I think that there's huge potential. Our challenge is to migrate forward as flash prices come down, to then apply Vista and then apply any future Windows operating systems onto these packages, right?
Sure.
And that's because, the intent of our group.
I mean, I think, because you mentioned that, it's interesting because as our operating systems evolve, they get more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
You think of the way that Vista handles memory management is different than the way that XP does. And the way that Vista handles memory management from the standpoint of making the system appear more performant or actually be more performant with SuperFetch and various other excellent algorithms that have been written, those will cost in this scenario because they'll take memory and processing space.
There are a number of attributes to consider when moving to Vista. One of them is that the graphics processor that you choose for your unit needs to be at DX9 or above.
Yeah.
Some of the low-cost processors out in the marketplace today don't have that, which would suggest that their 3D graphics rendering is going to be hampered, and hence XP may be a logical choice for processors such as that. If you're going to go with a platform that is Vista capable, which obviously we like that, then considerations of the footprint size, the RAM consumption come into play. Vista and Office 2007 solutions do take up more space, and so those machines tend to require something on the order of a 16 gigabyte module, not because everything is that much bigger, but because we're allowing more free space, more room for service packs in the future and things like that. And so they may not be in the ultra-low-cost category yet, but they will.
Okay.
I mean, as flash prices come down, you will see Vista in this space, absolutely. But we have Vista machines running on flash machines today, so we know the technology works, and it's just a matter of time.
It's true. Excellent. Yeah, I've seen it running on a... I can't remember the name of the model, but maybe it was a Toshiba, but it was flash-based, 30 gigs only.
because that's as much as you can get right now, I think. Super blazing fast memory reads.
I think Samsung even has a 64 gigabyte SSD now. So some of the higher end machines have a fair amount of capacity, but those sizes are not cheap.
No.
So there are interesting changes. You see flash being introduced in ultra low cost devices at the bottom of the spectrum with very small volumes, 2-4 gigabytes, and then at the very high end, SSD modules with 32, 64, or even higher capacities. And we see clearly a trend where flash storage will move into mainstream, and we expect that in a couple of years, flash will be used on most of the laptops. So this is why it's so exciting for us to work on this, because we are really at the forefront of what's happening, and we're helping the industry and our organization embrace the new technology.
Absolutely. And again, it's not like you guys have... So I came in here under the assumption that you had created a new version of XP to run on a very small footprint flash-based PC, but in case that's not the case. The case is you've made it such that you can install XP as it exists on these smaller devices by using some compression tricks and various other mechanisms.
So...
Just wanted to reiterate that.
Exactly right.
It's an excellent point. And the fact is that we leveraged Windows because the Windows architecture is open. It was open from the beginning and allows for those things to do. When you can do small tweaks in the driver model, you can do small tweaks at the application level to enable Windows to do certain things that wasn't possible to do before. So we leveraged existing code base as much as possible.
Cool. So let's get a peek at this running on one of these things, huh? Just for fun.
Okay.
Absolutely. So I have
just to show that this is actually really
right. Important. I don't know if you can capture this screenshot. It shows Windows XP running on the Asus EEE PC with a 4 gigabyte flash module. Nice. This is an SSD module behind a parallel ATA interface. What we show here is the disk control panel shows that it's a 4.9 gigabyte volume, and Windows XP together with Office 2003 takes only 1.2 gigabytes, so it leaves a lot of free space.
That's very, very cool.
Right, and it sort of goes against the myth that Windows is too big, too slow, too heavy.
Exactly.
Right. It's actually quite nimble. It's very fast. It boots very fast. It runs very well. It loads applications very well. And this little machine is quite capable of doing almost anything you would like to do on a PC.
Except perhaps maybe run Visual Studio and write code for it, huh?
yes. Or edit DVDs, but it's not really meant for this.
Understood. It's not a development machine.
Right.
Very, very cool. Excellent.
Yeah, this particular machine...
I got it.
You have it?
Yeah.
This particular machine has Office running and also IE, so I mean it gives you just a quick example of multiple applications, very traditional applications being used. I just got my reminders coming from Office, so you know, the performance is just fine.
Sure.
I mean this... I want to add one thing.
Please.
You know, we dog food our staff, and Mark was using this machine as his working machine for a couple of weeks right now, right?
More like a month.
Exactly.
And how's it been?
It has been... as a matter of fact, I love this machine. Uh-huh. The challenge with it, I would say, is twofold. One is that as updates come down, sometimes the machine slows down. That's one facet that I've noticed. The other is that if I'm ever going to work on a large PowerPoint...
Yeah.
You're going to want a large screen. And so, setting those two scenarios aside, which is probably less than 5% of the time, less than 2.5% of the time, I much prefer to go to meetings with this machine because it's very easy to walk around campus with, pop it down. The battery life is really good, and I have full access to mail. It's a much easier machine to walk around with than my other laptop.
So, I mean, that sort of begs the question. I mean, there's the concept of ultra-mobile PC, which obviously by design has got to be small. Mm-hmm. Then there's the notion of ultra-low-cost PC, but there's nothing in there that says it also has to have a super small form factor. It could be larger, but just not have a hard drive and the more expensive componentry.
There's a couple aspects to that. It's very true that ultra-low-cost PCs, they can have hard drives. It's not exclusively flash territory. So there are multiple things to consider there. I would also say that if you talk to the ultra-mobile team, while they are have originally done their early work, pioneering work, with experiences on fairly high-end hardware, their goal is to take it down in cost such that those become more value kinds of devices delivering rich Windows experiences. So I don't see them as mutually exclusive at all. In fact, I think the trajectory of UMPCs and this new class of ULC or ultra-low-cost PCs will converge over the course of time.
Cool. And you guys are making it possible to have a full-fledged general-purpose operating system as opposed to the standard or, you know, a standard like Windows CE or just another type of operating system.
We found years ago, we tried various different OS configurations, and some even as far as into the marketplace with operating system environments that didn't have full application compatibility. They had specific applications that would work, that were compiled to them, but couldn't take any general x86 application. And those devices didn't work. And the feedback we got from customers was they wanted application compatibility. And that was a core tenet for us. And we tried to remove components out of the operating system and see if we could maintain application compatibility in a second round of development and found that despite great efforts, somebody is always using some component someplace. And so that the only real strategy we had was to use the stock general purpose operating system and compact it and compress it using the image build tools that Bogdan's team has developed.
Cool. And that'd be fun to get dig into those sometime, Bogdan. You know what I mean? Get some of your devs in here and dig
Absolutely.
Into this stuff. It's very interesting.
We would love to.
Good.
Yes. I wanted to add something to this, your question about the difference between UMPC and ULPC. So UMPC is really designed for premium devices that have hard drives, large hard drives, touch, and inking, and I think of them as a tablet that is really shrunk to a very small form factor. Ultra low cost PCs are really cheap devices, and I think of them as a value laptops that are shrunk even more to the point that they have very minimal resources. And our challenge was not necessarily to create new support for new scenarios or new user interfaces, but rather at the platform level to enable Windows on those devices that have very limited resources. So we are very complementary in this sense, that the work we are doing on supporting Flash will be used by UMPCs of the future when their prices will go down and manufacturers will start developing even cheaper, smaller devices with touch screens and Flash storage.
Outstanding. Well, cool. I mean, is there anything else you want to get out there? I guess one of the obvious questions people are going to have is, how do they get one of these?
Well, if you're a student in emerging markets, there's plenty of opportunities out there. But I think you're going to see these machines come into stores like Best Buy even here in the U.S. So they are going mainstream now. So I think the access to the machines is going to get plentiful. I think the volume shipped is going to be surprising to people. And the message that I would leave with folks is this is a true paradigm shift from hard disk drives to solid-state storage. And paradigm shifts don't come around very often. And the rules kind of change when you jump across these transition points. And so we all need to prepare for this transition. It's already started, and I expect it to continue in the next 5 to 10 years, making pretty much of a full transition. So I would just encourage all the OEMs and ODMs to prepare for it, ISVs to prepare for it from a developer perspective, and just start to think about what's different in what they do that this device class could benefit from.
Excellent. Well, hey, thank you guys for your time. You have one more comment?
Yes, I have one more. So
excellent.
The first thing for hardware manufacturers, talk to us. We made it very simple for anyone to build a Windows-based solution. So we have documentation, we have tools, and we have know-how that we can share with anyone who wants to build a Windows-based Flash ultra-low-cost PCs. For developers, mm-hmm. my message is that it used to bigger is better. Mm-hmm. I think today smaller is better, and it's getting really small to the point that a lot of assumptions that we're making about what our applications will be running on mm-hmm. will change, and developers should start thinking about first the small form factors, smaller screens, and storage, and other resources the applications use. Those devices will have very limited resources, slow processors, little memory, little storage. Mm-hmm. So writing applications that use less memory, use less storage, have a smaller memory and storage footprint, mm-hmm. will render them better and will offer better experience on those devices.
If I could add one other thought here, is it's tempting to say Moore's Law is going to save us, and that flash prices will come on so fast that I don't need to worry about space. And I think eventually that may be true, but I think it's quite a ways out. Mm. As we look at the projections of flash costs, and you go ask companies like Gartner or others, Goldman Sachs, they have estimates of dollars per gigabyte on hard disk drives versus solid state memory, and their expectations are that the transition is 2013 to 2015, so it's quite a ways out. Mm-hmm. And until we get to that point, these devices will be constrained environments, and so for the time being, for the designs that we put in place for the next 5 or so years mm-hmm. that will be in market for 8 to 10 years, right? I mean, moving forward, very much need to consider constrained capacity devices that are going to be extremely popular. Mm-hmm. But we have to design them optimally for this environment. In time, Murphy's Law. Murphy's Law.
Uh-oh. That's
Moore's
good.
Law.
Yeah.
In time.
Murphy's Law will also hit us.
Yes.
In time, Moore's Law will definitely help, but it's just a ways out.
It's true. And I mean, you know, right now, I doubt any of these computers sitting on the table have, multi-core processors in them. But in fact,
a many-core processor will actually be an energy saver to some degree. And so we're actually going to probably see multi-core and many-core in these when they become standard.
We are seeing that dynamic happening with Starter Edition, where, I mean, it's targeting the bottom one-third of the PCs produced. And when we started, it was slower Celerons constituted that class. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, Pentium 4s jumped in as value processors, and that line has moved over the course of time. Mm-hmm. That'll happen in this space as well.
Absolutely. All right, you guys, it's been fun talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity.
This is really interesting stuff.
Thank you, Charles.
And we'll see you again.
Thanks, everybody, for having us.
Absolutely. Good stuff.